Hello, and welcome back to The Powerful Patient. I'm Joyce Graff, and today we're going to talk about one of my favorite subjects, food. It's not just about nutrition or the nourishing of our bodies. It's also about everything we put in our bodies, some of which is counterproductive. And so we really need to take a hard look at what we're putting into our bodies and whether it's what our bodies really need. We need to take care of our bodies so that they serve us well, not just today, but for the long haul. And dealing with chronic disease, with a disease that's with you for a long time, is something that our bodies can help us with if we give our bodies what they need to do that. And that's a subject that's becoming more and more prominent these days. As a matter of fact, there is a new film out called Food Matters. And I'd like to play you a little bit of the trailer from Food Matters. They have a website, foodmatters.tv, and it's to tell us that it does count. What we put into our mouths does count, and we need to take a look at that. And later in the program, we're going to meet Kurt, a young man who is living with cancer. He was operated on 10 years ago with a very large tumor that had already metastasized. He has undergone radiation therapy about 6 years ago, and he is managing his cancer very well. He's living and working full time and traveling and having a good time, and he has cancer. So it is possible to live with cancer, but it takes some work, and he's been willing to undertake that work, and he's going to share that with us. So stay tuned to meet Kurt, and right now I'd like to play you the trailer from a new film called Food Matters.
One of the best things terrorists could do was just build more fast food restaurants, maybe add another pharmaceutical company, have a couple more infomercials, and encourage people to eat the way they eat now. And everybody's going to be dead in 100 years. They can just walk right in, don't have to do a thing.
One quarter of what you eat keeps you alive, and three quarters of what you eat keeps your doctor alive. I used to get high for a living, eating on the bullshit
food that sold me. Cancer rate's going up, heart disease going up, stroke going up.
We're poisoning ourselves with highly processed, nutrient-depleted foods.
One of the major problems is what we do to the soil and the air and the water and everything we take in, our food.
We, for whatever reason, decided we're going to spray everything with every kind of pesticide, herbicide, larvicide, fungicide. We decided we're going to genetically modify things we don't know anything about. Can we actually improve what has already been created? And the answer is maybe, but not the way we've been doing it.
If you want to know what's wrong, look down at the table. It's staring back at you.
Think of it as chronic malnutrition, because that's what's going on.
But if we think we're going to go to the doctor and get a pill for everything, we've missed the whole point. We have been taught our whole lives to be consumers of modern medicine, which is pharmaceutical medicine. Good health makes a lot of sense, but it doesn't make a lot of dollars.
So the drug industry has every right to make money, no question about that at all. The ethics, I think, need to be very closely watched.
What the pharmaceutical companies are doing may not necessarily be in the interest of our population.
You can be as sincere, and you can be sincerely wrong.
Approximately 106,000 Americans die from pharmaceutical drugs each year. And these are people who took the medication as directed.
There is a lot more turning to alternatives, because what's being done beforehand doesn't work.
There is no magic bullet, but there is a lifestyle change that reverses serious chronic disease. It's cheap, it's simple, it's safe, it's effective.
The solutions are here. They've always been here. Every single person in the world, every culture, every language, every person in the world knows it. You are what you eat. Food does matter.
It's a choice. You don't have to be sick.
So if you get a chance to see the film, I highly recommend that you see it. I think it's important to mention here that we're not saying that Western medicine is wrong. Western medicine has done a lot of good. And as the film underscores, the Western medicine that we're familiar with is particularly good at emergency medicine, anything urgent, if you're in an automobile accident or if you need a knee replacement or something like that. It's very good at those sorts of things, the sort of rescue things. But when it comes to managing long-term conditions like diabetes, like cancer, like high blood pressure, the Western medicine approaches, the drug approaches, are frankly not improving things. Over the last 20, 40 years, we have not seen major improvements in these conditions. We have seen pretty much treading water. And what is it that's missing? What is it that we need to do in addition to the drugs? What is it that we can do just by better food choices to improve the basic health and stamina of our bodies, the ability of our bodies to resist disease, not just trying to fix everything? So I think if we take that approach, and that's the approach you're going to hear from Kurt, he used Western medicine for sure. He had a significant problem that needed some intervention, and he got that assistance very well from Western medicine. But what he didn't get there, and what he had to add on the side, was how he could strengthen his body to make sure that it could heal itself and could manage the cancer going forward. So that's what we're going to listen for, and I'd like you to meet Kurt. And Kurt is going to share with us his story.
I thought if you wouldn't mind, maybe give me some background on your experience with cancer and why you decided to take hold and do this different way of eating.
That's
all right? Okay.
I guess I was diagnosed. Well, I wasn't even really diagnosed until after I had the tumor removed. But I think that before that, I had actually not been feeling well for a while, and there had been no, you know, explanation for it. And so even before I had even a diagnosis, I went to a naturopath doctor. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And when I went there, he did something called iridology, which is a science based around reading the lines in your iris, in your eye.
Right.
And he put up a map of different things which correlate to different parts of your body, which they say, you know, your eyes, you can see everything in your eyes. And he was telling me things like, oh, yeah, you injured your shoulder on the right side. And I was wearing a jacket. There's no way he could have saw this. So he kind of convinced me that, hey, maybe I should try some of the stuff that he was going to recommend to me,
mm-hmm.
Which was, first of all, being a vegetarian, which I had actually been when I was younger anyway, but kind of moved away from it at a certain time. In addition to that, doing some cleansing of, like, my taking herbs and colon cleansing and stuff. I never did a colonic, but more just with fiber. And I figured, hey, let me just try some of this stuff and see how it goes. And
so how old were you when you were going to this naturopath?
I was started feeling kind of, I guess, low energy and maybe even some sweats and stuff. I can't remember the exact details, but this was in 1999.
Mm-hmm.
And then,
so you were 20-something.
I was 29 at the time.
29.
Or just about 28, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And my regular doctor said I was in perfect health. And then I went to see a specialist. Anyway, I got a referral to see a urologist.
Yeah.
Because one of my testicles was swollen. And the urologist said that it was just a varicose vein, in my testicle. But I told him I wasn't feeling good, and he said, well, you're fine. He said, your prostate's a little swollen. But that's when I went to see the naturopath. Because I felt like, hey, I feel like there's something not right. These guys don't detect it. Let me try something else.
Right.
And so that's when I saw the iridologist, and he said, hey, you know, your kidneys, this, your liver, you need to do some cleansing and take some herbs and change your diet. And then that was kind of the beginning of it. I did his program for a month, and then I went back to the urologist, and he said, hey, he had just told me to stay away from spicy food and a couple other things. And then he said, all right, well, your prostate's gone down a bit. But I didn't tell him I did all these other things in the meantime. So that was also reinforcing that I know that staying away from spicy food and a couple of things, you know, could probably help the prostate. But I think he was even surprised by his reaction that it had gone down as much as it did. So then I still wasn't feeling great. I was feeling better than I was, but I still wasn't feeling how I thought I should feel. And I got a second opinion from another urologist, and he said, hey, you know, usually the varicose veins in your testicle are on the right side. Yours is on the left. I've never heard of that before. So you should go and get a sonogram of your abdomen to make sure there's not a tumor causing this or anything, God forbid, which after I got the sonogram, they said, I think you should get an MRI. Or a CAT scan, I can't forget. I had a CAT scan and then MRI or the other way around. And finally, the first urologist I went to said, hey, guess what? I was wrong. You have a 17-centimeter tumor in your abdomen.
17 centimeters?
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. So that's like 5 or 6 inches? It's like a baseball.
It's about the size of a Nerf football.
Goodness
similar shape. It was on my left side, so it wasn't really pressed. There's not as many organs, I guess, on the left, like the liver's on the right and stuff. But It was my ribs were hurting, and I had actually went to see a chiropractor, and he was like, well, you know, it helped, but it never really resolved anything. So he said I had some sclerosis or something. But in any event, he referred me to, like, he's like, hey, I'm really sorry. I'll get you to see my teacher from UCLA.
So this is the urologist, the first urologist that you went back to, who admitted that he missed this, but is now trying to get you on the right path.
Yeah, so he got me to see his teacher, Dr. Donald Skinner, who was sort of a famous urology surgeon at USC. And so I went to see him, and he said, well, I don't know what it is. It could be kidney cancer. It could be, because it was, you know, over my kidney, the way most CEOs are. And they never really knew what it was. They just knew they had to get it out, which they did. And then it wasn't until, like, months later that they finally even got the biopsy back from the Mayo Clinic. They said it was a paraganglioma. And they said, hey, well, it's great. It's benign. So don't worry too much. Just come back and we'll test you with CAT scans. And I was not feeling good still. In fact, I was feeling a lot of anxiety and I guess kind of just, I don't know, just symptomatic things of having a paraganglioma, but I didn't know what those symptoms were until my mom went to the Stanford Medical Library and did some research on paragangliomas. These people at USC were not following or really aware of what was, you know, needed to be done. So we contacted the NIH because they had an article there my mom found.
Right.
We talked to them, and they said, hey, you know, you should come see us, which I did. They gave me an MIBG test, which was what I should have been having before. And they said, oh, yeah, you have metastases, and we need to follow you closely. And anyway.
Let me go back so that the other people who are listening to the show will understand. First of all, you had this 16-centimeter, this very large tumor on near or on the kidney.
Yeah, it was like close kind enough of wrapped to the, around it. Yeah.
Yeah, it was wrapped around the kidney. But they didn't check to see if it might be a pheochromocytoma, which is what it turned out to be. And that actually put you at very large risk during the surgery. So, and thank God everything went okay.
Yeah, you're right.
But
yeah.
A pheochromocytoma can be very dangerous during surgery. And so one would have hoped that they would have tested for that. And it's not that expensive a test. So when in doubt, do the bloody test. But first of all, there's a chemical test they can do that's, as I said, pretty inexpensive. But then once they have some indication chemically that it might be a pheochromocytoma or a paraganglioma, which is the word you used before. Which
that's what I have, actually.
Yeah, a pheo that's outside the adrenal gland is often called a paraganglioma. And either one of those emits hormones that are like this fight-or-flight response, the hormones that cause us to feel anxiety. You mentioned you were feeling anxious.
Uh-huh.
But it's also that fight-or-flight response, and it can send your cardiovascular system into overdrive. So were you feeling like heart palpitations or high blood pressure or any of that?
Here's the thing. Mine, what I found out later, was a non-secreting.
Okay.
So, like in urine tests and stuff, it doesn't secrete the normal or the common thing. So, fortunately, it wasn't an issue in the surgery. But, yeah, you're right. It could have been. And
But then you mentioned this MIBG test, and an MIBG is a nuclear medicine test, a test where they inject a tracer in your blood, and it goes and seeks out the particular cells that are in a paraganglioma or a pheochromocytoma. Mm-hmm. And then when they do the nuclear scan, it'll light up like a light bulb wherever it is. And part of the problem with these kinds of tumors is they can occur in multiple parts of the body.
Right.
So, sorry for the interruption. Go ahead and tell us what happened with your MIBG.
I figured people already knew, but it's good to explain it. Yeah, so the thing was, I wasn't even being tested properly in the follow-up for having a paraganglioma because there's just not that much information out there. I don't think people are aware.
Right.
They said that you have a paraganglioma, it's benign, come back for a CAT scan. But a CAT scan wouldn't really have detected anything unless they knew what they were looking for. And
right.
So fortunately, like I said, my mom did the research, and I wound up at the NIH, and which they said I had metastases in various places, and they were going to watch me. And they watched me until, I think, I wound up going there in 2000, and then they watched me until 2002 when I went and had the MIBG treatment, which is a high dose of that, of a similar, very closely related radioactive injection, which up to this point has worked fairly well. But I think in addition to the, Western medicine, and I've done things on my own, mm-hmm. been proactive with my health, which I think has made a big difference. That I've felt and I think has shown in my test results and follow-up.
Let's take a little break here, and we'll be right back to speak more with Kurt.
Von Hippel-Lindau disease, or VHL, is a genetic condition involving abnormal growth of tumors in some parts of the body. VHL occurs in every ethnic group worldwide. At this time, there's no cure, but research is helping those afflicted and their families learn how to manage their disease. When a family member has a tumor, it affects everyone in the family. VHL Alliance works to improve diagnosis, treatment, and the quality of life. Finding tumors early, getting the best treatment, and sharing information with others to help them cope is what VHL Alliance is all about. They're available to help lessen the stress of living with this lifetime chronic disease. Support the Cancer Research Fund of the VHL Alliance at VHL.org. That's Very Happy Life, VHL.org. 1-800-767-4-VHL.
We're back now speaking with Kurt about how he has supported his body in controlling the metastatic cancer that he's been living with for 10 years.
So since 2002, you've been managing metastatic cancer and doing that mostly, as you said, by taking responsibility for your health. Tell us more about what you're doing here.
Well, I think, you know, some of the things I've done have been recommended by healthcare professionals who just may be a little bit out of the ordinary field of, let's see, I go see an endocrinologist. So I've seen naturopath doctors. I've seen acupuncturists and, I guess, Chinese-oriented doctors. And I've seen, also, last year I saw a guy who was trained by a man named Dr. Weil. Andrew Weil.
Yes.
Andrew Weil is pretty well known for his nutritional and supplements and programs and stuff. And he has a certification course which he trains, you know, more like medical doctors in so that they can have a broader understanding of nutrition and apply that in their, you know, techniques. So,
great.
Yeah, so I saw a doctor. I've seen a couple doctors actually who've been certified and trained by Andrew Weil, and I think that it's more or less been a process of me seeing all types of different doctors, getting their opinions and trying things and seeing what feels good and what's also given results. And so I think, you know, everyone body is probably slightly different, and I could say some of the things I'm doing, but I think ultimately it's a personal experience that's gonna, you know, hopefully help the most.
That's right. And so you've had the good fortune to find physicians, MD doctors, who have also received this supplemental training in nutrition from Dr. Weil.
Exactly.
And that's fairly unusual because I saw a statistic just the other day that only about 8% of doctors have any formal training at all in nutrition. And most of them have serious misconceptions about the role of nutrition and the importance of nutrition.
Yeah, I mean, I think the movie clip that I sent you, Food Matters, and in a way it kind of has a little bit of doctor bashing in there, which I understand because people are frustrated, but I also think that it's just more or less they're just not trained in that field, and the awareness needs to be brought so that they will be. It's not that they don't. I guess it's just more a case of ignorance versus not anything else malicious or anything like that. But I think some people might paint it out a little more differently. I mean, I think between obviously exercise and diet and nutrition, those things can and I think for me have made a big difference.
Did anyone do any particular evaluation to figure out, I don't know, a hair analysis or something like that, to figure out what vitamins or things like that you might have been short on that you needed to supplement?
You know, I've done some blood tests. I haven't done the hair analysis thing, but I have done some blood tests and worked with a doctor who looking at, I mean, I think when you have a blood test and it's interpreted by a regular MD, they say, okay, well, you're within the range, so it's okay.
Right.
But I think in some, or even in most cases, if you're on the low side, it may not really be okay.
Mm-hmm.
Or if you're on the high side and something else, it may not really be okay. And also, these are just kind of general ranges, too, you know.
Right.
That everybody's body is different, as I was saying. So it's not, always as clear-cut as the numbers on a piece of paper.
Right. So if the normal range, quote-unquote, is something like, I'm making this up, but 50 to 150, that's
right.
A big range. And
exactly.
As you say, if you're 120, that's great. If you're 51, you may be within the normal range, but you're probably a little low.
Right.
You know, it's a little like the oil in your car, you know. Mm-hmm. When you get down around that line, it's probably time to add another quart.
Yeah. Yeah, so I think that's a good point. I mean, I think, I guess, you know, I've been mostly vegetarian, and I think that's helped me. I wouldn't say that's for everybody, but mm-hmm. I think eating healthy, and if you are going to eat meat, eating organic meat would definitely be, and eating, you know, less meat in general would probably be very helpful. I have taken fish, I do take fish oil on the recommendation of the doctor who I saw, who's been trained by Andrew Weil. Mm-hmm. I take medicinal mushrooms. There's blends that you can get sort of from a, you know, a vitamin place. I take, you know, every day vitamins. The other thing I do is I juice a lot,
mm-hmm.
Where I bought a juicer and I do like, usually some greens like spinach or kale mixed with, like apple and ginger or carrot and ginger and, so, I mean, that's a good way to get the nutrients straight out of the food that way. And,
mm-hmm.
you know, eating vegetables can be kind of boring sometimes, too, so that's a way to make sure you get those nutrients from vegetables, the leafy green vegetables especially.
Right, and this film program that you were talking about, Food Matters, talks a lot mm-hmm. about how food has changed in the last 50 years. It's not the same food that our great-grandparents ate. It's
right.
been processed a great deal, and a lot of additives have been used to fertilize it, to keep the bugs down, to keep the fungi down, possibly
mm-hmm.
genetically modified. So at this point, it doesn't have the same vitamin content that it used to, as well as having these little trace elements of pesticides and so forth on it that really are not doing our bodies any good and are potentially contributing to the growth of cancers in our bodies.
Yeah, I mean, I would say if you are like me and you're concerned about your cancer, just be as proactive as you can with your diet and try to go all organic as much as you can. And I would say to juice, to have raw juices, see a doctor who's been trained by Dr. Weil or at least has similar, you know, training and nutrition. I rarely eat any sugar. I try not to eat processed foods. Or foods with preservatives, you know, or every once in a while, of course, you probably will have to have a little bit of something. But, you know, I think it's impossible to eat totally that way, but
right.
I do the best I can. And
right.
I think, trying to think of some other superfoods, if you can add those type of superfoods, which they were mentioning in Food Matters.
So what are superfoods?
Well, I think wheatgrass is considered a superfood. Wheatgrass juice, you can get that at like Jamba Juice and the Whole Foods by my house has a juice bar, so they have it.
Mm-hmm.
I think you can also, like some of those things like spirulina and things like that, I get the capsules, the greens capsules from Trader Joe's. They have like a lot of the kind of superfood stuff in it.
This is a category of foods that are particularly high in nutrients, right?
Mm-hmm.
That when we think about how we're going to feed twice as many people on the same planet, we can look to foods like this that are particularly rich in nutrients or rich in protein.
Mm-hmm.
And so those are worth exploring.
Definitely.
Let's take a little break here, and we'll be right back, so don't go away. We'll be back with Kurt in just a minute to talk more about meats and getting the best nutrition possible. The Powerful Patient is brought to you as a public service by the Cancer Research Fund of the VHL Alliance. We work with people who are dealing with complex medical conditions or who may be struggling to get a diagnosis. We help you learn how to manage your health, form a partnership with your healthcare providers, and manage your healthcare team. Read about us on our website at powerfulpatient.org. We welcome your questions, which help to shape the programming of this show. And you can send it to us by email or by telephone. The telephone number is 800-767-4845, extension 6. Thank you. And now we're back to speak with Kurt some more about nutrition. I should mention that when he said that his doctor recommended that he eat a vegetarian diet, anyone who has kidney problems in particular is often recommended to be on a vegetarian diet. And the reason for this is that it's very hard for the body to break down the nutrients from meats. It's the hardest job that the body does. And so particularly when there's a wounded kidney or one of the other internal organs that is involved in the processing of meat, the suggestion is that if you eat less meat, that it would be less stressful for your body to digest the food. So the idea is to make as many nutrients as possible available to your body with the least amount of effort on the part of the body.
Well, you mentioned before about meats, and there's a lot of controversy about meats. Let's talk about meats for a little bit. Because I've noticed, too, because I've been trying to go organic, and organic meaning that there's no pesticides and things like that used in the raising of the meats.
The hormones, too.
But hormones being injected as part of the effort in this country to increase the production and therefore make more money in agribusiness, they started injecting animals with hormones to make them grow faster and get to market faster. But we never did study what impact that might have on the people who eat that meat and whether that growth hormone was going to cause us to grow or cause things like cancers to grow more rapidly. And there is evidence now that that is trickling down and not being so great for us. So there is a movement in this country to try to get back to organic and not use those hormones. And you can read the labels and so forth. But the other thing I've noticed lately is that the food that's fed to the animals is also something that we need to think about. Grass-fed beef is the latest thing that I've been seeing. And, you know, you thought cows ate grass, right?
But it
you'd think. But it seems that in order to increase production that they've been feeding them corn mash. And as a matter of fact, when they were talking about the mad cow disease.
They're actually feeding them cows.
They're actually feeding them cows.
Yeah.
Now, cows are vegetarians. There's no reason for them to want to eat any beef products at all, much less to eat their own kind. That's like cannibalism.
Yeah.
So it really blew my mind that anybody would even think about it, but they were actually feeding mashed up cow brain to other cows and causing this disease to propagate.
Yeah.
So, yeah, grass-fed cows, if you're going to have meat at all, look for organic, non-hormones, and grass-fed. Any other things that people should watch out for?
Well, I think just from what I've kind of learned that there's definitely a hysteria about you have to eat protein, you have to eat a lot of protein, and I think it's true the body needs protein, but I think that you you can get it other places, and you don't have to eat as much meat as people might suggest. And I mean, there's, if you eat complex carbohydrates, from what I understand, that's probably just as good for your body in many ways. Like if you eat brown rice instead of white rice, or you're eating, you know, fresh vegetables and fruits, you're doing your body a justice versus, you know, frozen or, you know, white bread and things that have been processed with sugar. But I did actually, from a more of a Eastern point, see like acupuncturists who said there's certain things that are in broth, from like organic chicken broth or things like that, not necessarily the meat itself, but if that can be helpful for the body when it's when it needs the extra, I guess, things that are in the broth. I guess it helps build your body to fight and to rebuild itself against cancers and things like that. So there are some other benefits, maybe not from the meat directly, but from like the broth and things
like
that.
The calcium from the bones and
yeah. And
other minerals and elements like that.
Yeah.
So I mean, meat is not a bad thing in and of itself, but the way the meat is prepared is often not a good thing for us. And as you say, vegetarian sources can be equally good for your body, and there are good protein sources in the plant kingdom.
Yeah.
But you do need to be careful to get complete proteins, and there's a really good book called Diet for a Small Planet that I remember reading, and it's like beans plus rice and
the combinations and stuff.
Right. Yep. Mm-hmm. To make sure that you get as complete a protein as you would from a meat source.
Yeah, and also there's good protein powders available to mix into smoothies and things like that, too.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I do smoothies sometimes.
And then tell us more about juicing. So this is a way of getting more nutrition sort of compacted and prepared in a way that your intestine can absorb it really rapidly?
Yeah, I guess when you masticate, you're basically extracting the minerals and vitamins from the food. It mixes with your saliva and it gets digested. So you're kind of, by juicing, from my understanding, kind of making it more of like a power shot of that stuff. You know, it's kind of, it's not, your body doesn't have to put as much energy in to break it down. It's kind of like just right there. So
Right. That's
as far as I understand the concept behind it. And there's different types of juicers. There's some that have more of a pressing type of action involved. And as far as I know, that helps extract the substances better than the ones that just kind of grate. And I also noticed that the juice seems a little bit more, I guess, wholesome as well.
Okay.
So if you're going to get a juicer, try to get one that has more of a pressing action, like the Champion has some. And there's a few different kinds, I believe, that do that. But
right. Even
at Jamba Juice, they sell juicers like that. So it's pretty common nowadays.
And when you go to the grocery store these days, you can see in the dairy case there are bottles of carrot juice and pomegranate juice and so forth. What's the advantage of doing your juicing at home as opposed to buying some that are already prepared?
Well, I think that if you have a lot, not all juices that you buy on the shelf, but a lot of them, they have to be pasteurized to keep them safe for you know, a number of days so the bacteria doesn't grow in them.
Mm-hmm.
So I believe that the enzymes, if you pasteurize them, can be diminished a bit. So you're not getting as much of the vitality out of the juice. I mean, from what I understand, you really, when you do juice, you should drink it like as soon as possible and mix it with your saliva in your mouth to get the full effect from it. I guess the longer it sits around and the more things you do to it, the less of an effect. I mean, I travel a lot, so, you know, on occasion, if I can't juice my, if I can't get to a place that juices fresh juices, then I'll buy something like that. I mean, if you're still better off than drinking like a vitamin water or something with all that sugar in it.
Right.
You know, there might be vitamins in it, but all that sugar, I'm sure, counteracts it.
Now, do you take vitamin capsules as well?
Yeah, I do take various vitamins and herbs and things. And I take what I would say are like food-based vitamins.
Mm-hmm.
I guess there's different types of vitamins that are extracted in different ways. And the ones that I've been taking have been mostly, like if you read the ingredients, there's carrots and spinach and parsley, and that's kind of what's in the vitamin.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I don't know. I've had varying opinions. I just know how they make me feel, and I think that they help. And so it's kind of like a more food-based, I would say, is the way to go. I'm trying to remember the brand. Rainbow Light has some that are like that. And
but you've noticed a difference in the way they make you feel.
Yeah, I think vitamins have definitely helped. I think that the vitamins that are easier for your body to assimilate are going to be more noticeable.
Right.
Then where your body has to work to break them down, it's not going to be as helpful to you.
Well, the other comment that I've heard about the synthetic vitamins is that sometimes the way that it's synthesized is like the mirror image of the way it is in nature, and your body doesn't always recognize it in quite the same way. So it may not be absorbed. It may chemically, it may look the same, but it's not being recognized by the body and absorbed in the same way. So that's one thing. And the other thing is if you get it from food sources, Mother Nature's packing a lot more than just a single chemical compound into those foods. There's a whole range, a whole spectrum of things that come with it, some trace minerals and whatever, that are also good for us. And we don't even appreciate all the stuff that's in it when we go to recompound it.
Right, that's a good point. I think, yeah, that's. I think that's where I kind of my body just notices a difference if I'm taking the food-based vitamin.
So one good way to get food-based vitamins is to juice it, and then it makes it more readily available to the body.
Yeah.
Yeah, it goes down your throat, but then it wends its way through, 25 feet of bowel, and the nutrients are absorbed through the walls of the bowel. And if it is juiced, then, as you say, the body doesn't have to work to break it down. It's already broken down. It can just slurp it up.
And here's another point about that, too. If your body has, for instance, like things blocking it, it may not absorb things properly. Mm-hmm. So from my experience, I think cleansing your body is also a very important thing to do to enable it to absorb and benefit from things like the juices and vitamins and herbs. So, like, I guess I've done various colon cleanses. I haven't done colonics, but I guess there's been people who swear by them and stuff. I've done more just like fiber-based, laxative type of colon cleansers, and I've done some kidney cleansing and stuff, and liver cleansing. There's a cleanse called the Amazing Liver Cleanse. I've done it a number of times, and it's basically you drink apple juice for a week, and it kind of loosens up stuff in your liver and gallbladder, and then you have to drink this kind of awful tasting concoction of olive oil and grapefruit juice. And it kind of like releases gallstones and kidney, or liver stones and things, and gets this stuff out of your body. Kind of like, I guess, I was thinking like if you have a car and you have an oil filter, it's like changing the oil filter or cleaning it out, sort of. Because your liver's also cleans your body and your blood and stuff.
Right.
And it makes these stones, which, you know, there's our neighbor actually was going to have gallbladder stone surgery or have her gallbladder removed. And my mom said, hey, you might want to try this first. And she tried it and passed all the stones and didn't need the surgery.
Amazing. So now, is that the sort of thing that you really should probably do under a doctor's guidance?
Well, yeah, in a way, maybe a naturopath can. I mean, I've done some of the things already before, so I think I was a little more experienced. So right. I wouldn't necessarily. I don't think you can hurt yourself. It's all natural stuff, you know.
Right.
The worst that can happen is you can vomit, which I've done once from probably just drinking too much of that concoction. But mm-hmm. I don't think there's anything that you can really do detrimental to yourself, because it's just natural things that you're, for the right. most part, using.
Right.
But, I mean, yeah, if you have a naturopath or somebody who can instruct you, it would be helpful, I think.
Let's take a little break here, and we'll be right back to talk more with Kurt about finding the right members for your healthcare team so that you can put together the best knowledge about nutrition and the best knowledge about the medical condition that you're dealing with.
This is Keith Richards, a.k.a. Just Saying. Is there cancer in your family? There is in mine. But it doesn't have to be bad. We can take action to protect ourselves. I've learned how to get screened and manage my health so that I'll live a long, healthy life. How about you? Visit www.powerfulpatient.org. Again, that's www.powerfulpatient.org. Peace.
Yeah, part of the problem is finding the right professional who has enough training and perspective, both in the natural medicines and in the condition that you may be dealing with, that they feel confident in making some recommendations. So
yeah.
Did you have to search a long time before you found the right practitioners? It sounds like you've got some good folks on your team.
Yeah, I mean, I've definitely benefited from living in a place like Los Angeles, because mm-hmm. there's just a lot of people open to those ideas and practicing them here already. I mean, if someone was living in middle America, it may be a little bit harder. But yeah, I think that I've met different people and tried different things and seen what their results have been and felt like, okay, this person is understanding me, and explain to them, you know, I've given them my MRIs, I've given them my MIBG, they don't know what it is, I explain it to them, and maybe sometimes I'd say one thing, and they go, oh, it's neuroendocrine system.
Yeah, it's a neuroendocrine disorder, right.
They go, oh, well, maybe this herb could be helpful for that. It's a supportive herb, you know, that you might
right.
want to try. You know, so there's different information. You got to give everyone all the information. And even, for instance, when I went to see Dr. Abrams, he's a doctor who was trained by Dr. Weil. I had him write a report and send it to my endocrinologist. And so I think if the doctors are kind of all informing people of what they're doing,
good.
That's a helpful thing, like you said, to kind of build your health team around you. And no, who knows, maybe one person might miss something and someone else can pick it up, or vice versa, and that could be an important key to helping your healing.
Right. So you went through chemotherapy, basically, with the SMRBT treatment
mm-hmm.
more than 10 years ago, and how are you doing now?
Well, there was a 6 years ago. So the MIBG is more of a radiation treatment, actually, than a chemotherapy.
Mm-hmm.
The best way to describe it, I think, would be radiation.
Oh, right.
Radiation therapy.
Okay.
But the surgery I had was 99, so just about 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
But generally, I've been improving. I think for the most part, I've been watching, you know, I'm definitely being watched carefully and closely. And I think really being in touch with my own body and how I feel is a very key thing. You know, certain things that I eat, if I can tell how they feel to my body, how if my body likes them or if it doesn't, you know, and I think that's a very important thing for me, is listening to myself when I eat things, do certain maybe cleanses or different herbs or even exercises and things like that. Like I've been doing some Pilates and things like that to help, strengthen my body and other ways too.
Great. So you're working full time?
Yeah.
And traveling a lot?
Yeah, I travel for my work a lot. That's
great.
True.
And enjoying your life?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I have a girlfriend now for a few years, and I told her, and she's like, wow, she's like, you don't even look like anything's wrong with you. I can't believe that, you know?
Great.
But, you know, I'm just fighting it and taking it a step at a time. I don't imagine that it's going to get the best of me anytime soon.
Great. And I think the other thing we should stress is that you didn't turn your back on the Western medicine doctors. You're using both the best of the regular Western medicine treatment and, in addition to that, worrying about nutrition and taking control of what you eat.
Well, yeah, there's definitely extremes to both sides. There's the medical doctors who say, hey, you don't need vitamins. And then there's the, you know, naturopath type of doctors who say, don't trust, you know, the Western doctors, they're just going to kill you. So I've kind of been aware that it's really just about formulating your own best team around you. And like I said, listening to your body and feeling what is right for you.
Great. Well, thank you so much. I really appreciate you sharing all this. Any other words of wisdom for somebody who's thinking about it, but thinking, oh, my God, this sounds like a lot of work, that I, you know, taking all this control over nutrition, it sounds like a really difficult job because there's nobody there to really hand you a plan.
Well, a naturopath or, like, the doctors who are trained by Dr. Weil can hand you a plan, actually. They can. So don't leave your health responsible in other people's hands completely. Take your own responsibility and you'll feel better mentally and physically, I think. You know, it's like I had a friend of mine whose dad was 60-something years old and kind of set in his ways, and he wasn't really... He was more just listening to what the doctor had to say. He was open to trying other things, but I think, you know, ultimately it's up to somebody to take control of their own self, whether it's a lot of work or not. It's like how bad you want it as well, you know.
Right. You have your one and only body, and you can either take care of it or not. So.
Yeah, some people actually, like, I think my friend's dad was kind of like, hey, I'm 70 years old, or he was late 60s. I lived a great life, you know, that's fine. I'm not. I was 29 when this happened to me, and I had the motivation and the energy and interest to, and a great support team with my family and everybody else around me who loved me to really do everything I can. So... I mean, I'm sure there's older people who've gone through this similar things and rebounded as well.
Yeah, and I'm 60-something, and I think one of the problems is that people my age have been told for a lot of years that, oh, with all the wonderfulness in the American diet, you don't need to take supplemental vitamins, or, you know, if you take too much of one vitamin, it can be bad for you. And a lot of those are myths that we need to put to rest. And but it's hard to get them out of our brains because that has been told to us. And it's been told to our doctors. Mm-hmm. So a lot of doctors are going to poo-poo worrying about nutrition. Hopefully fewer these days, but as you've illustrated, keep looking until you find a doctor who knows what he's talking about and not just spouting that wrong wisdom.
Yeah, on AndrewWild.com, I believe, or through that website, you can actually get referred to one of the doctors he's trained. And from what I understand, he's trained a lot of doctors around the country and continues to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's a lot more awareness today than just in the last 2 years even.
And for cleansing and things like that, a naturopath is the type of doctor you can Google or look in your white, yellow pages, and maybe if you have a friend who knows somebody, and go from there.
Right. Well, I'm delighted that you're doing so well. I hope you continue to do great.
Thank you. I do too. Thank you for your support and your interest. I think this is really good information. I mean, no disrespect to the people from the NIH, but I think this is a major thing that was missing from the symposium that I went to. And I, you know, sent the Food Matters to, and I told her that this type of stuff really needs to be integrated. And they do research on it at the NIH. There's a whole department there that researches this kind of stuff. But
yeah, and I know just working with my own medical advisory board for VHL, because from the family's perspective, we think it's important too. But the doctors will often say to us, well, there's no clear-cut evidence that it's true. Well, what they mean is that nobody's done a study of 100 people with the same condition and found out, you know, how many of them do better if they take vitamins or not. And that kind of study is very difficult to put together, number one, because there may not be 100 people in your situation. And secondly, it's expensive.
Right.
And most clinical trials, which is what that is, are funded by the drug companies.
Exactly.
And if there's no drug and no financial motivation to do a clinical trial, it doesn't get done. So, I think there's the family observations are also extremely important.
Yeah. I don't know. I just felt that was just a major thing missing from the whole symposium.
And this Food Matters, and I'll put the pointer in the handout that goes with the show, but foodmatters.tv, there's a trailer that you can watch for free, or for like $5 you can watch the whole movie online, or you can order the DVD. But I found it very revealing. It really had a lot of very interesting information in it, and presented in a way that was one of the most credible presentations I've seen of it. It's not just bashing, as you said. It's really got a lot of very well thought through information in it, and a lot of it that has been around for a long time and that just has not gotten the visibility that it needs.
Right. But I do see a movement in the world and the country towards style of eating. I mean, even just the fact that Whole Foods, for instance, has, you know, kind of become like a new standard in supermarkets is a good evidence of that.
Well, hey, thanks so much.
Thank you, Joyce.
Take good care.
Okay, I will. You too.
Many thanks to Kurt for sharing his story. As he said, he is the evidence that taking care of your body can make a very significant impact. There are many people who have taken this path, which takes some dedication. It takes focus and dedication and a willingness to change the way you eat. But it is possible to get your body to a much stronger point where it is able to fend off the forces that become cancers. We're all bombarded with things every day, pollutants in the air, just the sunshine that we walk through, that can cause changes in the genes in our body that could result in a cancer. That doesn't mean you should stay home or out of the sun. It does mean that you need to keep your body operating at full capacity, because we do have defenses built into our bodies that go through and check and make sure that every cell that gets created is created correctly. And if it isn't, it tells that cell to go self-destruct and it makes another cell. So there is a kind of spell checker in our bodies that goes and checks for these things. That's part of our immune system. And if our bodies are working correctly, we should be able to fend off all of those possible diseases. But it's when our nutrition is not the way it should be. It's when our bodies are not operating at peak capacity. It's when our stress levels are too high that our bodies are not able to fend off these diseases. And we may need some help from drugs. So let's keep it all in capacity. All of these things are very important. We don't shun the drugs, but on the other hand, we want to minimize our need for the drugs. And let's work together with our bodies and with our medical professionals to stay strong and be well and be a powerful patient. This is Joyce Graff. I'll see you next week.